Today on the Illini Inquirer podcast, it's time to get ready for the marquee game of Illinois football's non-conference schedule. It's reigning ACC champion Duke returning to Illinois for a 2:30 p.m. kickoff at Geese Memorial Stadium. It'll be a sellout as Illinois tries to sweep the home-and-home series after a 45-19 win in Durham last season. That was behind five takeaways and almost 300 yards and three touchdowns from Luke Altmyer. But these two teams look very different. Duke has some strengths that line up with Illinois' concerns following week one. So Joey Wagner and I will break down the game from all angles. That's coming up next right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Welcome to the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Welcome into the Illini Inquirer podcast. It is Jeremy Warner and Joey Wagner. Week one, Joey, was kind of a let's open up the box, see what Illinois has inside with all these toys. This week, I think it's kind of let's see how good they really are matched up against a much better opponent. One of the better games in the Big Ten this weekend. We got a sellout crowd at Geese Memorial Stadium. Joey, this is really a tone setter for the rest of the season. And as we get closer, I'm starting to feel that a little bit more and more.
Yeah, you can really sense that you get this game, have a very good chance of going 3-0 in the non-conference. Otherwise, you've got big problems with Southern Illinois and FCS team coming to town next week. You should take some momentum into Ohio State, which we all know that's a huge uphill battle for Illinois. But just to go, even if you come out of Columbus, which was likely 3-1, you feel good. You've got a big win over Duke, but you got to get there first. And you got to beat a Duke team that can really present some problems to you, Jeremy. I know we're going to get in to what those problems are. I don't know there's a huge secret at this point. You just glance at the box scores for where maybe where some of the concerns land here. But yeah, more and more as this gets closer, it's like, okay, this really could be something here. And now you're talking the difference. Maybe this is somewhere between 7 and 8 wins, right? I mean, you get this, you can see a path to 8 wins. Otherwise, it's going to be, you're going to have some struggles.
It's one of the, I would say, 8 toss-up games on the Power 4 schedule.
Is that it? 8?
Yeah, and obviously they'll be favored in a lot of them, including this one. But outside of Oregon, Ohio State, I think all those games you just kind of toss up, and you hope Illinois wins more than they lose among all those. And this is kind of one of those swing games early in the schedule that, again, just like last year, Joe, you win this one and you feel like it can be one of those seasons. It's a huge confidence booster, not just the outside, but I think in that locker room. And I think that Duke win last year, that second half where they ran away with it, gave them some momentum. Now, it didn't last very long because 2 weeks later you got smashed by Indiana, but I think you knew at least at that time that this was probably going to be a solid to good Big Ten team. If you lose this game, I think Duke can do some decent things in the ACC. I don't think they're an ACC title contender. I didn't think that last year after Durham, and they found a way to get to the ACC championship game and win it. But if you lose that one, all of a sudden you're thinking, oh, the downside of the season is real.
Yeah, and it leaves, because if they lose, I think they're going to lose in a way that would just follow up concerns from week one, right? Then all of a sudden, you start really wondering, in this case, can they stop the run enough in the Big Ten? That's a huge storyline in this game. And some of those toss-up games that you just said Illinois is probably going to be favored in, maybe you start to get a little uneasy with some of those. And as you get into the meat of the season here, and especially into conference play. So, yeah, it's confidence for the way that Illinois is perceived. I mean, I think Illinois got some benefit of the doubt in preseason, given how much turnover it had. You beat Duke, that looks pretty justified. If you don't lose to Duke, it's like, okay, now you start to really poke holes in some of the things that already look maybe a little bit sketchy. So, big opportunity for Illinois. I mean, again, I want to be careful here, Jeremy, because I don't think you and I are saying, like, this will define the season.
No.
But I think it will really give some gas for the next 4 or 5 weeks as you get to that first or that only bye week this week, and you just get a chance to get a toss-up game. That's really what it comes down to, is get one of the toss-up games, and there are a lot of them.
Listen, Illinois is not losing to Western Illinois. I can confidently say that. This will define the non-conference
season. It's because they're playing Southern Illinois.
Oh, Southern Illinois. Yeah, sorry. Excuse me. Wrong directional school.
I don't win many.
Thank you for the correction. That's like the last couple of years I screw up. Which one was Western Michigan? Which year was Central Michigan? I always screw those up.
I still have no idea.
So, yeah, I'm getting to age 40 here soon, so I'll blame it on that. I do want to mention this. Before we get into our six-pack of questions, we'll do our picks to click, we'll do our bold predictions, and we'll look at the Big Ten schedule as well. But I do want to mention, I don't know if we talked enough about this last week. That was a hell of a atmosphere the other night, like last Thursday in that season opener. The attendance was down from the year prior in the season opener. I would say it being ridiculously hot would be one of those. And obviously not as much hype around this team as there was last year, as they were number 11 in the country, 12 in the country at that time. But that was a great atmosphere. The scoreboard obviously did something to do with that, but the students had brought it. I would imagine they're going to bring it again. It's a sellout crowd, Joey. This is now 7 sellouts over the last 14 home games, dating back to the last 3 seasons here. Just to put that in perspective, they had 1 sellout in the previous 11 seasons where fans were allowed in the stadium. This has become a really good atmosphere. And it's one thing I think is going to show up on Saturdays. This is a real home advantage now for Illinois. That's played out with the record, and they're not perfect at home those last 3 seasons and all those sellouts. But this is like, I actually think it's an advantage when Illinois gets other teams in here because the crowd is actually there, they're loud, and they're into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's credit for Brett Bielema for building this program to be an appetizing way to spend your Saturday afternoon. And also for fans for showing, I mean, it's not been perfect, right? I mean, it's, you've mentioned that there've been some home letdowns. Obviously there's games you want back, but fans show up, it's a great atmosphere. And you think back to Duke last year, that may have been closer to an advantage for Illinois, the way there was so much orange in the stands at Duke. And it's just going to be, I think it's going to be really opposite atmosphere this week or this year at Illinois. And just, they show up, man. It's probably going to be a little warm, but 2:30, probably some time to throw a few back in the morning, spend some time with Lante before noon,
Derek Piper.
Have a good time and Derek Piper and make it a good home field advantage. And the students, that was probably one of my bigger takeaways from last week. 8 o'clock, hotter than hell, show up like that for that game against a team that's, yeah, and it's for not really even a marquee opponent, right? And to be there and have that impact, there's been a lot of heavy lifting to make that a home field advantage in whatever degree you want to say it is, by everyone involved in Illinois, and they've gotten it there.
And I'll just say, like, they, with that scoreboard now, with the upgrades they've made throughout the stadium, Grange Grove, like, it is, that's a real damn college football atmosphere. Like, it was not for the first decade I covered this program. And now I think it's becoming, like, a cool place to go watch a college football game. All right, let's dive in to our 6-pack of questions, Joey, and let's start with number one is Brandon Henderson is out for this game, suffered a lower leg injury in the 4th quarter, got rolled up on, doesn't sound like it'll be season ending, but could be back within 2 weeks, or this could last in the 4 to 6 weeks. That to me would say some kind of soft tissue sprain, something like that, Joey. So how does Brandon Henderson's injury impact the Illinois offensive line going against this Duke pass rush?
Yeah, TJ McMillan played 7 snaps against Duke last year. He is in line to start at right guard for Illinois. Brett Bielema didn't really say it. Bart Miller sure did the following day. So TJ McMillan steps in for Brandon Henderson. But there's only 7 snaps on this offensive line that have seen this Duke defensive front. And Manny Diaz, a lot is talked about because he's really good at generating pressure from different areas, making things uncomfortable. That's a concern, right? Brandon Henderson at least had some idea what to expect. TJ McMillan is as veteran as they come. He's a really, really good football mind. I don't worry a great deal about it being him stepping into that role, other than the fact that we talked about the need for this line to gel for a month now. And the first game, you lose someone, and now that gelling process just takes a little bit more time. The thing I like, TJ McMillan got a lot of spring reps, so even though he's at a different position, that voice, that continuity, kind of what he likes, what he doesn't like, that's all there. And he's going to be lined up next to Jake Renfro. I feel really, really good about that. But it's just not a lot that has seen what Duke is going to do. And I would expect Manny Diaz and Duke to push buttons, to try to take this Illinois offensive line that's talented but still inexperienced in the Power 4 and try to make them uncomfortable, try to get them a little unsettled, see where you can find some pressure points and attack those. That's what good coaches do. He's a really good coach, and he's a good coach who also will be a little exotic, will be aggressive, and he'll err on that side of things. That is a concern without a starter who's had all the one reps in the last month.
The good news is TJ McMillan has a start under his belt at Purdue last year and played pretty well, though it was a different position at center. And the staff seems to trust him like he's a starter, right? Like there seems to be no doubt he can go in there and perform pretty decently for them. he just doesn't have a lot of snaps, Joey. Like, there's not a ton of experience despite him being a senior. And I'm not saying TJ McMillan's tiny. He's 6'3", 300 pounds, but he's not the biggest guy. Like, Brandon Henderson's an imposing 6'5", 320. I'd like him to be a little bit more consistent at this point in his career, but he's still, you know what you're getting out of him, and the highs are really, really good. But I already had some questions on the right side of the line. I thought Nathan Knappick did not have a great opener. Bart Miller confirmed that. Like, he did not play all that well. And now you add a new right guard in here. And I do find it interesting that Brett Bielema mentioned Desmond Schuster as an option. On the offensive line, we thought he meant right guard. Does he mean right tackle? Does he mean Desmond Schuster could get in there? Because that's 6'5", 6'6", 330 pounds. That's some size. I do like McMillan going up against this pass rush, but getting that run game going, it'll be interesting to see how McMillan does. But this is a Duke defensive front that we know is aggressive, Joey. So calling out play calls, I trust McMillan and Renfro to get everybody on the right page with those. But, like, they need to be stout on the interior, because those defensive ends, we remember last year, they like to get wide and bend around the edge. They like to take long, those kind of long angles getting there, which can be tough to get under them. That means Caden Hauser has to step up in the pocket. That means TJ McMillan has to be stout in pass protection. I like Jake Renfro. I like Mike Matalow to do that. McMillan's going to have to show that this weekend.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Don't get too far on the that Schuster thing, because that's our second beer question here, Jeremy, is to talk about that. But Duke's, we do have to acknowledge Duke's defensive front has changed. Wesley Williams, NFL. Vincent Anthony, NFL. Those guys were really good. J.C. Davis didn't get beat a lot last year. He got beat in the first half against Duke, and Illinois had to really correct some things. At halftime, credit to them, they did that, and they turned that around. So, I mean, that was a positive. But, yeah, I don't think it's going to – the talent might be different, but I still think what Manny Diaz and what those defensive coaches want to do up front is probably going to stay very, very similar. So remember when we talked all offseason about got some new tackles here, they're going to see some different things. They're going to see some talent. All right, test one is Duke, and even if that's not Wesley Williams and Vincent Anthony, it's still talented power forward players in a scheme that is designed to be aggressive. So I'm with you on that. I don't know – if we're going to see a rotation at right guard, or if there, I think as long as TJ McMillan is serviceable, and I think we have confidence in him that he will be serviceable, I think they're going to lean with him and not try to rotate too much. I do want to talk about Des Schuster here in a second. So I guess, yeah, big test up front and especially on the outside.
And this is why you made Christian Martin a priority. You want him to be able to protect your quarterback. Bryce Davis, new to the starting role, 3 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, had a pressure as well in his debut. And I thought Tyshawn Reed, who kind of reminds me of Seth Coleman's build, was just as impressive. He had 6 pressures, didn't get to the quarterback for a sack, but he bends really well. Both those guys really do. So they're going to try and get under, bend around, take some wide angles. So Caden Hauser's going to have to be good, but that interior of the offensive line is going to have to set something up there. And I think the running backs, we saw some good box from Khalil Valentine last week. I think he's going to be really important in all that too. So yeah, they got some talent up front. Outside of the linebacker Luke Murgut, I thought the DNs were the best players on their defense against Tulane.
Yeah, when you describe their defensive ends, that's why you kind of like Christian Martin's build in this. I mean, we've talked about how he still needs to add weight, but he's really athletic. I like that. When you're going up against guys who are going to bend and who are Seth Coleman builds, which is a really long athletic build, big test for those guys. And I'm really eager to see the right tackle spot alongside Millen. I think this is probably that transition into that.
Yeah, and I would add, I think Christian Abney is going to play a big role in pass protection. You might see some more max protect in this game as well. It's a big game for Bart Miller, right? Like, he's seen Manny Diaz a couple times here. Like, obviously, we expect some growing pains. I don't put that all on the offensive line coach when you have 5 different starters from last year's game against Duke, right? But you do want these guys prepared. You want them communicating well. So we'll see how the offensive line handles that. Number 2, Joey, what other Illini personnel decisions or use is most intriguing for you heading into week 2?
Yeah, we should talk about right tackle. When Brett Bielema brought up Des Schuster, who we've known majority of his time at Illinois, he's been a tackle. I know he's got guard flex, but we talked a lot about him giving tackle depth. When he brought him up on Monday, it's like, okay, what's going on? You know, why is he brought up? That's exactly right. When we talked to Bart Miller on Tuesday, you talked to Bart Miller, and he said, TJ, we made it very clear that's TJ McMillan's job. And we sat down and we thought, and why was Des Schuster brought up by Brett Bielema? And I think that could be right tackle. Nathan Knappich didn't have a stellar first game. I don't think they're going to bench him for the first snap. I don't think that's the case here. I don't even know that maybe there will be as much of a rotation as we're talking about, but I do wonder how far behind Schuster is right there to go in and take some of those reps if necessary. It's kind of hard for me to get a gauge on how real that is, because I also think that this staff understands the value of sticking with their top five. So I don't want to paint the picture of it's going to be a short leash for Knappich and then goes Des Schuster, but he was brought up for a reason. And that's what I'm really curious about is, okay, what was that reason? Will we see him in this game? I don't know. That's not number one for me, but because we were talking about the offensive line, I do think that is something to monitor.
Yeah. I also think wide receiver usage will be interesting. I think there would have been a few more snaps for guys like Ty Robinson and maybe Eddie Casper gets a few snaps. I don't know how much changes, Joey, until Jayshon Platt gets back. And you asked Brett Bielema, or Brett Bielema talked about Jayshon Platt today, said probably going to be in the team hotel this week and maybe could play next week against Southern Illinois, not Western Illinois. I think that would be the biggest impact. Otherwise, I think you trust your three receivers. I think you could get more targets for Braden Trimble. Maybe Ty Robinson, Eddie Casper get a few snaps. Does Nate Sitchie get on the field? But I don't know how much changes there.
Brett Bielema basically said that today when I said, there was some talk about finding a wide receiver depth. And he said, he gave some names, which is great. But then he also said, Steph's not like, unlike other coaches in our system here, where you got three really good players. What would really be the appeal? And I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but what would really be the appeal to take those three players off the field? And I went back through, and I'll have some PFF numbers just in terms of, going through how many receivers played 10 or more, or more than 10 snaps. Only 8 times in Brett Bielema's tenure have only three receivers played 10 or more snaps. A lot of that happened in 2023. That was Pat Bryant, that was Isaiah Williams, and that was Casey Washington. And it was very much, okay, I don't know what's behind them. They're really good. It's not really a universe to take Pat Bryant off the field. It was that Zachary Franklin that year, right? That was
Zachary would have been 24.
That's right. Yes. So that was Pat, Casey, Isaiah that year. Don't have a lot of appetite to take those guys off the field. Is anyone in that next group really, really pushing to make you feel like you've got to take one of those three? I don't know that that's the case. And I don't think they're going to do it just for the sake of it. It is fascinating because I do think you'd like to establish some of that depth. And it's what I'm going to write about for Friday. But man, when you're top three, you're as comfortable with as you are, why move away from that? It just doesn't make sense.
And I don't think Colin Dixon needs breaks. I just don't think he needs it.
If Colin Dixon was like, if he played like fewer than 80% of the snaps, I think our question in the press conference would be, why didn't Colin play? Right? Like, he's just earned that. He's out there. His versatility, the way he plays, like, you've got to have that dude on the football field. So as much as I like the idea of getting a few different names in there, and I think Ty Robinson can have a role just given his frame, be hard-pressed for me to co-sign taking one of those three off the field.
I agree. I just think you might see some more targets for Trimble. I think you could see more snaps for Fagan just because they're not going to have 44 offensive snaps again. The other thing
That really sucks. That really sucks because that skews how we talk about this week in terms of why didn't Trimble get more? Why didn't Fagan get more? Well, they had 44 snaps. Yeah. Like that, we would have had a much better picture. I'm sorry, Dana, but I've thought about that all week. We would have had a much better picture of usage. You would have seen Barry Lunny maybe get a chance to get some stuff drawn up for Fagan or for Trimble. They only had 44 snaps, and some of those were fairly high pressure snaps late in the first half, into the third quarter. I just wish that would have not played out that way because that was the opportunity to really kind of see a little bit more out of what they want to do. And Barry seemed a little bit
Monday. He was a little fiery, some sucking his crawl a little bit. And I told you, I think it's only because he only got to run 44 offensive plays. Like, he was pissed about it.
Yeah.
He also didn't seem happy about the offensive line play in the second half, which I get.
No, he really didn't. And I think it kind of started on that backed up three and out where they just couldn't get anything going. I know you did a really good film breakdown, second down. felt like there were some breakdowns, Caden Fagan, Nathan Knappick, and then just couldn't really get anything going. That was you would have liked to see more, because you could have taken 44 into 51, 52, 53 at that point if you pick some of those up. So that really seems to have stuck with him. It's kind of been bothering me all week that we have to frame everything and a lot of the answers come back to, well, we only ran 44 plays, and you just didn't get a full picture like you would have liked to see, or at least more of a picture.
I'm going
to
give a few couple quick ones to get out of this question. Mm-hmm. Cornerback 2 snaps. I know you're really intrigued by that. Yep. Is that split again? Does Taiwan get more than Jaquan Morris this week? That'll be interesting. Linebacker snaps, does that change at all after a rough week? Do you see more Grant Bierman or less of Grant Bierman? Do you see more Robert Edmondson? Yeah, that's what I'm interested to see. Is there more Will Holmes after a great game? I think the top three at defensive end, those guys, you just like to rotate a lot more. I just wonder if Will Holmes maybe gets more of Demetrius John snaps. I also wonder, do you go bigger and do you get like Carter Jenke and Pat Farrell on the field at the same time? Like, does the defensive front change a little bit more this week going against a team that I think is going to be physical and try to run you down? So I wonder if they put more size out there and you actually get like a four-person look at some point. But maybe that's wrong. Maybe more Mason Moragan just to give you some more size. I don't know.
Yeah, I had all those written down. And seeing, did Ian Ray, I have been pronouncing that incorrectly since the dawn of time. Does he get more snaps? Like, he was really productive as a pass rusher. Again, I think our concern with Illinois' defense in this game is less about being pass rushers and more about containing Nate Shepard. Is he a guy who has earned more? And then beyond that, I have a lot of questions about how him, Moragan, and when Daniel Brown is ultimately healthy. Sounds like that could be next week. How do all three of those guys fit together, play together, those snaps align? Does Ian Ray have some position flex? Like, there are just little things like that that you look for in that cornerback, too. I'm still fascinated. I don't think it's ever going to be like a 70-30 snap split, but you could be in that 65-35, 60-40, because they have traditionally played three cornerbacks, and we know one of those cornerback non-negotiables is Juice Clark. He's going to be out there every healthy snap he can be. So yeah, I had a lot of those same things written down. I'm fascinated by the defensive front and the linebacker snaps.
All right, we will continue our six-pack of questions. But first, I want to tell you guys about Game Day Spirit. If you're an Illini fan, you already know that Game Day Spirit is the best place to pick up Fighting Illini merchandise in town and online. And with Fighting Illini Athletics back in full swing, you're due to refresh your Illini wardrobe. GameDaySpirit.com is loaded with fresh Illini gear, including Final Four gear to commemorate Illini basketball's great run, new Illini football t-shirts, and of course, all the latest NIL gear. You can get merch of any of the 100-plus players in the Illini football roster, including jerseys and jerseys. Game Day Spirit makes it easy with their amazing product selection and two convenient store locations in town at the corner of 6th and Green in Campus Town and at the corner of Neal and Kirby in Champaign. You can also shop with them online 24/7 at GameDaySpirit.com. And now, just for Illini Inquirer listeners, they're offering an exclusive discount code off your next online purchase with them. Use code GAMEDAY15 at checkout for 15% off your next purchase online at GameDaySpirit.com. That's code GAMEDAY15 for 15% off your next order at GameDaySpirit.com, brought to you by the official fan store of the Fighting Illini, Game Day Spirit. All right, Joey, going into question number 3 here. Let's dive more into this game specifically. How does Bobby Hauk slow down this Duke rushing attack as Nate Shepard ran for 227 yards that led the country last week on 35 carries to beat Tulane 17-3?
Yeah, we could probably get cute and talk about bigger defensive line, cleaning up tackles, which is obviously a huge one. I guess there's Matt Bailey, right? I think that is where I don't know if we need to overthink this one. Play Matt Bailey in the box. Let him be more of a linebacker of that hybrid linebacker mix. Trust your secondary to be a strength of your team. Trust him to be able to play man-to-man against a quarterback who didn't really inspire last week for Duke. And that means you can unleash Matt Bailey more in the box. Let him clean up some of those areas he needs to clean up. Let him be aggressive. Make Duke throw the ball. That's the best thing you can possibly do, is make them throw the ball. Nate Shepard's really, really good. He's really good at forcing missed tackles. Illinois didn't look very good at tackling last week. So just, if they beat you a couple times early in the air, more power to them. I want Matt Bailey in the box as much as humanly possible, and just putting an extra hat in there and saying, okay, here's third and seven plus, third and six plus, and then let your defensive front be exotic. Let them stunt. Let them bring pressure from different areas and get in the face of a quarterback and try to rattle them if you can.
Nate Shepard's really good. He was a freshman All-American according to The Athletic last year, ran for over 1,100 yards, 11 touchdowns last year. I don't think he played against Illinois. I think he was banged up in that one. But he's really, really good. And when he gets to that second level, he's tough to bring down. Like, he's churning his legs. Like, he's not like 240 or anything like that, but he runs like it. So he does have that explosiveness, but also a power element, and he doesn't go down usually on the first hit. So tackling has to be better up front. Like, you have to be more stout up front. I thought Illinois, its gap assignments were good last week. It's just they didn't make the tackle. So hopefully with some live tackling under their belts, a better second half of tackling, they get better at that. But Joey, this offensive line for Duke is really good too. Like, they create some holes, and they put a hat on a hat, move some bodies, really good at inside zone runs, really experienced offensive line with 103 career starts at this level. Obviously way more than what Illinois has right now. So I do think, though, I mean, anybody who watched that Duke-Tulane game, you're impressed by Duke's defense, you're impressed by their running game, you're probably not impressed by their quarterback. Like, that was a significant downgrade. They had a quarterback, and you feel for Duke because Darian Mensah said he was coming back, and then he just gets an offer he can't refuse at Miami, and they also steal their star wide receiver, Cooper Marcotti. It sucks for Duke. And they had to scramble. They get Walker Egitt, who had a solid career at San Jose State, but under 60% completion rate in an air raid kind of scheme. His accuracy was not very good last week. He's coming off a knee injury, Joey, so he's not moving all that well. You're right. Make that guy beat you. Like, go man coverage. Trust your DBs against a wide receiver crew that's basically all new from last year, too. They lost their top guys from last year. Barcotti was one of them. There was another guy that was really, really good last year with Mensah. He's gone. So their best target's a tight end and Jeremiah Haseley. Go in man coverage, get Matt Bailey more in the box, and let him run free and make some plays and force Egitt to beat you. He did not show enough accuracy. He does have experience, but he has turned it over with 19 interceptions the last 2 years. Get some movement on those early runs. Force some second and longs, third and longs. I think you can tee off a little bit on Egitt. The one thing I do want to say is they will put their backup quarterback in on some running plays. Dan Mahan, he's basically just a running option. He's kind of their Tim Tebow his freshman year. He goes in there. He had some good offers. But, yeah, like that quarterback's an issue, but you got to force that quarterback to throw, and that means you got to load up the box on him.
Yeah, we spent all offseason saying the secondary is a strength because it is. Well, there's no sense in having a strength if you're not letting them be that. And we know they're going to play more man. I'm fine with that. If you get beat a couple times early on, you got beat a couple times against UAB on some real prayer throws, you'll live with that. If that means you're keeping Nate Shepard in check, and if you're doing that, you're also allowing your offense to get on the field. You can't have the time of possession skewed in the way that it was against UAB and the 44 snaps that we just talked about. Even if that happened because the first six snaps were led to two touchdowns, you've got to have a little bit more time there, because the best chance you have with this is Caden Hauser on the football field. And however that comes to be to get him out there, you need to find a way to do that. And I think the secondary can handle it. I think Mac Resetish, I think Xavier Scott, I think Juice Clark, I think the combination of Tywan Cox, of Jaquan Morris, I think they can handle that if that means you're sacrificing some of that. And you can be creative with it too, right? I mean, I like Mac Resetish to play in the box some if you want to give a different look and let Matt Bailey play a little bit more in the back end of that defense. So there's options you can do. You can get creative with that. And some of that also falls. Mac Resetish cleaned up those tackles that he missed last year, and he did a good job with that against UAB. You know, he's stout. I trust him in the box, too, to just give you different looks. But a lot of the time should be let Matt Bailey go be a really, really good player and a player who can be featured in this defense.
I know given last week it's a little scary to go against a team that's trying to be physical and run the football and show they could do it against a good G5 team last week, but I'm glad Illinois is playing this team. Like, I want to see it. I want to see it improve. I want to see this kind of test to see how much they improve week one to week two, and see what Bobby Houck does to try and get that improvement out of him.
And how much did he not show last week? Yeah. That's also in the back of my mind a little bit, is I think there's more he can tap into schematically with pressures and just different ways to get under the skin of a quarterback, and all that starts with stopping the run. However you got to do that, if you got to load the box to do it, do it. But I wonder how much more he'll be able to show off this week.
All right, number four, Joey, how does Barry Lunny Jr. break the 1-1 head-to-head between him and Manny Diaz? Manny Diaz and Penn State, 130-13 in 2023, and then obviously with the help of five takeaways, but Illinois' offense with Luke Altmyer and Hank Beatty had a big day, got the best of Manny Diaz's defense last year. So how does Barry Lunny attack Manny Diaz's defense?
Yeah, this feels like it's going to be the quarterback hour here for the next couple topics here, but let Hayden Hauser cook. Let him be. You got a quarterback advantage, and you're going to have it in a majority of games. I know we're talking about a one-game sample size. I'm good with what I saw with Hayden Hauser week one. Let him go out there, make some of those quick hitters, try to negate that Duke pressure by just getting quick release valves to Colin Dixon. Maybe that's Caden Fagan in this game. Maybe that's Hudson Clement in this game. Just let him get the ball out quickly. Make Duke know that, hey, we're going to pass to set up the run. Last year, Illinois had 16 first half pass attempts, and it was a back and forth. I mean, it just didn't feel like they were letting Luke Altmyer at the time go as much. He had 12 in the third quarter alone last year. Turnovers help, but letting Luke Altmyer, quick hitters, make the defense uncomfortable. We know Colin Dixon can be a yards after the catch guy. We know Caden Fagan can be a yards after the catch guy. I just want to see them just quick passes, set it up, maybe get a little bit lighter in the box, then let Khalil Valentine, let Aiden Loffrey run the ball out. And Illinois ran the ball very well in the fourth quarter last year against Duke to really seal the game. So let your quarterback advantage be your advantage, man, and let Hayden Hauser be in control.
Yeah, I don't think we're inventing anything here. Like, this is always a key to the game, like establish the run so you don't get in these second and third longs. Like, you don't want to do that against this Duke team, because Manny Diaz is going to bring pressure almost all the time against an offensive line that obviously we have some questions about, especially with Brandon Henderson. But you said it, Joe, like, I think getting some quick hitters to that pressure packages, those are the counters to this, and I think they're pretty good at it. Like, you saw Hudson Clement and Hayden Hauser have like a kind of communication right before a snap, a corner blitz, they got it out right away. Like, you have these veterans with Hudson Clement, Hayden Hauser, Colin Dixon, that I feel like those guys should be able to do these things. Some screen passes, we saw him try to get Braden Trimble involved a little bit with that. Like, I can see some of that, but also like some tight end slips. I think you can get those guys in the flat, running back slipping out, going in to be a pass catcher. I think they can be dangerous in that regard. You got to have a counter to all this pressure. When they bring all those guys, some guys slip, and your quarterback's got to make those decisions. But as you said, I trust that guy. I already do. I think he's going to be really, really, really good. So, yeah, just some of those quick hitters, because these DNs, man, they are aggressive, wide angles, some draw plays. Do you get Hayden Hauser involved in the run game a little bit with that? I think they seem pretty excited about what he can add with his feet too. And we all saw it against UAB.
Yeah, I also trust the guy calling the plays. Like, I know we say that a lot on here. It's because this team has a really good offensive coordinator. Yep. And a guy who can maximize things really, really well. He's seen Manny Diaz and this defense a few times now, dating back to Penn State. He knows what it's all about. I don't think he's going to be caught off guard by anything that Duke tries to throw at him. And you got to then hope your guys aren't caught off guard by that. But man, I'm a big believer of when you got an advantage at that position, lean into that as much as you possibly can and let him get rolling.
All right, I think we'll talk about that here next with the next question as well. But before we do that, I want to tell you guys about Factor. We get busy in the fall. You got the kids back in school. You're running around. You still want to eat well, and that's where Factor comes in. They make chef-crafted, dietitian-designed, ready-to-eat meals so you don't have to choose between real food and convenience. They have over 175 banned ingredients, so every Factor meal is designed around what supports a healthier lifestyle and nothing that doesn't. Factor meals are ready in 2 minutes, require no prep, no cleanup, so even on the days your schedule is completely out of control, eating well is still achievable. And every week you'll find 100 nutrient-dense menu items to choose from and new options like salmon burgers, shredded pork, collard greens, and more, plus add-ons you'll crave like pumpkin-flavored cheesecakes and protein shakes. So let's eat real. Head to factormeals.com/Illini50off and use code Illini50off to get 50% off and one free breakfast item per box for 1 year while supplies last until October 31st. That's code Illini50off at factormeals.com/Illini50off at factormeals.com. See site for details. All right, Joey, let's dive into
a full fridge. We have a full section of our fridge dedicated to Factor meals. It is taking over our refrigerator, but it's also incredibly convenient.
I need to have you do that read next time. You can break it down.
I could break it down. I could not do the read as well as you do the read. You got that video life where you're able to do that. I would trip over myself and I'd get lost halfway through.
You got to be 97% at it just to make sure people know you're doing it for real. All right. Number five, what's your biggest reason for confidence in Illinois going against Duke?
This feels like we're really belaboring the point a little bit, but it's Caton Hauser. Like I was so impressed with what he did last week in 44 snaps. I thought he was in command. I don't think there were any throws that you thought, oh, kind of got away with one on that one. He was really efficient in what he did. The four incompletions, two were because of pressure, two were because of drops. Just a flawless a showing as you could possibly have. The ability for him to show off with his legs a little bit. I don't think Illinois is going to get too comfortable doing that because it's not really a total strength of his, and also kind of a lot of value in that guy that you don't want to get him running free too much down the field. But you look at the two quarterbacks coming into this, what Hauser did and what Walter Egett did. It's a very different story of two quarterbacks. So let the quarterback that you paid money, a lot of money to go get, and let the offensive coordinator who's developed transfer quarterbacks, let those two go to work, man, and I'll take that. When you're talking about just the things that Duke does that are concerning for Illinois, we'll get into that. I still think a good quarterback and a quarterback advantage trumps pretty much everything.
You have a quarterback that you know can go win you games. I don't think Duke does. And that's a problem. That's a big problem. So, like, Duke's strengths match up with Illinois' concerns, right? Like, that's a huge concern. But Illinois has the one thing that you feel like is the most important thing on the football field, along with coaching, obviously, but like the one position you have to have figured out to have a chance to win games every week. And I don't think it's hyperbole to say that after a game against UAB. Like, he was phenomenal there. He has a track record at ECU. He's started games in the Big Ten. I think we all saw a quarterback that's very, very good. And I do want to make this point. If he continues that, and I have confidence it will, if you hit on three quarterbacks in a row in the transfer portal, how insane is that? Like, look what Michigan's doing with a five-star quarterback right now. Look what Nebraska just went through with a five-star quarterback. So I get everyone wants this high school quarterback to come up. Illinois's got a pretty damn good hit rate I'll roll with at transfer quarterback. So I think he's really, really good. And I think it's going to be a close game. But the reason I picked Illinois in my preview and picks, and I know you did too, Joey, all of us that did, is basically the quarterback. I think Illinois has got a guy. I think Duke is questioning whether it does. They have to game plan around a quarterback that they don't know can win them a game. Maybe he does. Maybe he goes and does it. Maybe Caton Hauser has a couple interceptions or something like that. But going into this game, the biggest advantage on either side is Illinois' quarterback situation. So when that's what you feel confident in, like, that's what gives me confidence going into most of these toss-up games.
And you know what? Full disclosure, it sucks for Duke that this is the situation that it's in right now.
Because they should have a dude.
Yeah, like, this should be an incredibly fun quarterback matchup going, but Mintz is now at Miami. There's 2 points, Jeremy, that I want to make, and I've already quickly forgotten the second one. But the first is, if you're 3-for-3 on transfer quarterbacks, in what world wouldn't you step up to the plate for a fourth time? Like, that is what I keep coming back to when we're talking about 27 quarterbacking. I know it's a long way away. If you end up at 3-for-3, your sell is as good as anybody who's going to be looking for a quarterback. Yeah, like, I would at least go explore that market to go 4-for-4 if you can do it.
And I keep saying it. Like, I hope I see Carson Boyd or Michael Clayton as a starter someday. That'd be cool, right? If they're not as good as the guys they can get into the portal, like, why would you not go? Just because you
world's changing.
It's cute or it's more fun. Like, I don't – you go get the best quarterback and help you win games. No one has shown they can keep going to the portal and finding that guy, so – anyway,
the best appeal for that one is it is fun, right? It gives you a little nostalgia for what roster building used to be. I understand all that. The real tangible advantage for that was you're going to have 1 year, presumably, where you have a deal on a quarterback, or you have a quarterback who maybe isn't what good you enough hoped or what you needed to be.
That's, and that's right. That's so, like, more costly than being able to spend it on the defensive line.
There's no long-term hometown discount. Right, like, you might get one, an unproven discount. You're either going to have to pay them the following year, or you're going to have to find a different quarterback the following year. So, like, that the only appeal is, man, maybe that one year you could build up other spots on your roster to get through that. The second point I have, let's just quickly go down the schedule here. In games at Illinois, we suspect we'll have a quarterback advantage. Southern Illinois, yes. Ohio State, no. Purdue, yes. Michigan State, yes. Oregon, no. Maryland, toss-up. Nebraska, yes. UCLA, toss-up. Iowa, yes. Northwestern, yes. That about how you would line that out? I think obviously as you get later in the schedule and some of those guys can prove themselves, maybe there's some variance there, but I think quickly, definitely not in two toss-ups, and otherwise, yes.
I think some Nebraska fans might say Calandria is an advantage. I'm not there yet. I would have had Hauser higher on my preseason list, but I agree with what you said. Yeah, and that's why they went and got a guy, right? Instead of just being like, oh, we'll run the football well and play good defense behind Ethan Hampton and Carson Boyd. Like, you go get a guy because we've seen the value of quarterback play, and I think Illinois got another one, which should just not be overlooked. Like, how
I do wonder if Northwestern can make that a toss-up by the end, because I like the combo of Childs and Chip Kelly, but I wouldn't say that.
No.
Right at this moment.
No, I think Hauser's a better quarterback. Childs is talented, but when it just comes to actual quarterbacking, I trust Hauser. All right, number six, Joey, what's your biggest reason for concern for Illinois against Duke?
We saw them try to stop the UAB run game last week. That didn't go well. Missed tackles. Huge concern out of that game. Then you bring in Nate Shepard, and I think he's going to start to get properly rated. He's a really, really good running back. He ran for 1,000 yards as a freshman on a team with Mensah, but you knew they were comfortable throwing the ball around a lot, and Shepard still had 1,000 yards. Jeremy, he had 14 missed tackles forced last week. That led the country. 14. Illinois did not tackle. Like, that's a combo that's terrifying for a guy who can force missed tackles against a defense that didn't tackle it very well. He was number 9 nationally. It wasn't a one-off, a reflection of Tulane. Nate Shepard was number 9 nationally as a freshman last season in missed tackles forced. He's got a history of doing this, man. Like, that is really, really concerning, because you don't have to put pressure on their quarterback if they're able to get third and manageables. They're able to just kind of keep in front of the sticks, run the ball comfortably. I thought one of the most damning things that UAB did last week, and I just remember thinking watching that game, it's 3rd and 5 and they're running the ball. That is, if you're a defense and a group of five teams coming into a Power 4 road game and they're comfortable running on 3rd and 5 and converting some of those, you should take some offense to that. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, those are passing downs and they're comfortable running. I think Duke would be wise to do the same and run until you can't run anymore. So that really, really concerns me, because you can take your quarterback advantage out of this if you can't get them on the field, if you're not making their quarterback make plays, and they got a running back to do those things. And that concerns me a lot.
Yeah, co-signing all of that. We know linebackers have to step up. I think Matthew Bailey is incredibly important. He gives me a little bit of a – I think he just gives you a security blanket back there, you know, that you have that guy that can clean up a mess that is in front of them. But my concern, Joey, is you might not be as good in the trenches as Duke. And for a Big Ten team, that's concerning, right? So that's what I am really interested to see, is if your defensive disruption – can cause problems for a Duke offensive line that I think is really good. Like, they put a hat on a hat. They're really experienced. They know what they're doing. They run the inside zone really, really well. And they give the running back some head of steam before he gets the chance to break some tackles at the second level. And he's really good at it, as you just broke down. My other concern is your offensive line has to go against a defensive front that just had 27 pressures against Tulane, one of the better G5 programs. It's a really good scheme. And they have some good athletes. I don't think the second and third levels of this defense are as good, so that's where I think Illinois can create some problems. But they have some good defensive linemen and a really good linebacker. And this offensive line, with a starter out and with younger, I guess not younger, but tackles who are less experienced at this level, it's a big game for Christian Martin and for Nathan Knappick and for the tight ends to help there, because these defensive ends are real problems. So offensive line, defensive line, defensive front, they all have something to prove this week, and I'm excited to see how they respond to that.
Yeah, to your point about the offensive line in the non-Renfro category, quick mathing this as best I can, we're talking fewer than 6 starts against Power 4 teams for the other four guys.
Christian Martin made one last year. Christian Martin made one last year against Washington. But yeah, it's under 10.
Knappick made one. McMillan made one. Madelau was in JUCO. Might be less than that. I'm trying to go back to Christian Martin, not last year, in 2024.
I don't think he started a game then.
Yeah, that's not a lot of start against power four guys. And it's not the end-all, be-all, but not a lot of experience. That's what we talk about when we talk about experience, is just what that level looks like. And when you factor that in with what Manny Diaz is comfortable doing defensively, there's a lot to prove for this offensive line up front, and just seeing some of the guys that they're going to go up against. So, yeah, man, I'm with you on that. And, you know, we saw UAB was able to get ahead of steam for its running backs to go and force some of those missed tackles. UAB running backs also, they were good. Mm-hmm. That was a good group. This isn't just Illinois kind of tripped over itself. That was a good running back group. We need to give that credit where it's due. But, yeah, the trenches are the story, Jeremy, in this game.
Yeah. Because otherwise,
we'll see how that goes.
I feel good about Illinois skill players, whether it's this game or Duke or the Big Ten. I have questions about the trenches, and we'll find out a lot more after this week. All right, let's get to our picks to click. I didn't write yours down from last week. Do you remember yours from last week?
It's offensive line, and I did put some parameters on it. I know I hit on the TFL and SAC combined. I don't know that they ran it to the numbers that I put out there, but I had offensive line, and I had Ishkante.
There you go.
Defensively. I had a late win.
That. I had Moragan, so Ishkante gets it over that. But I didn't love Ishkante's first three quarters, but he did have the interception return touchdown via Will Holmes. I had Khalil Valentine. That one, I think, hit. Then Mason Moragan, which he did not hit. So you won the defense. I won the offense. I'll let you go first, Joey. Offense, pick to click, non-Caton Hauser edition.
Huh.
Were you going to really do Hauser?
No, but I do have concerns about defense if you put any parameters on that. I'm going to take Hudson Clement. It just feels – yeah, that's right. It just feels right. Like Colin Dixon, he got a lot of flowers this week. He got a lot of flowers this month, and he's earned all of those. He had a huge game against UAB. Hudson Clement, another week in practice, another week building that chemistry with Caton Hauser. I just feel like he's probably due. I think back to that one. I don't like to put all the stock in one open practice that we saw over the course of a training camp. He was in green, and he still looked really good. And some of the timing route, like the catches he had against UAB, those are timing catches, and it's just – I believe in those. When the quarterback and receiver are connecting on those timing plays, that means there's something there. So just – I'm there on him. Tulane threw for more than 200 yards a week ago. This is a new look. Duke secondary is pretty good last year. Now you've got kind of some new faces to work back in. It's in the secondary for Duke. I think it's there. I think Colin Dixon's going to get a lot of deserved attention. I did flirt with Braden Trimble a little bit here. Still not sure I want to jump off that train completely, but I think it's the Hudson Clement game.
All right, if I were smart, I'd do that. I'd just stick with Colin Dixon. I could do that every game this season and probably feel pretty good about it. I had Hudson Clement written down. So I'm going to pivot. Let's do it. Braden Trimble. I think they want to target him more. I think he would have gotten some more targets. Dropped one where he could have had two catches for 30 yards, and he would have felt good about it. I think there's going to be a lot more plays. I think Illinois is going to have to throw the ball. And if you're only playing three receivers, somebody else has to get the ball other than the primary read. So I do think Braden Trimble is going to get a lot more involved in this game. Something like four catches for 60 yards, Joey. Maybe a first career touchdown. I'm going to go with Braden Trimble.
I like that pick. When you have one a rotation that's pretty light, right, in terms of number of guys, you know Duke, you would assume Duke is going to say, okay, Colin Dixon ain't going to beat us. Okay, Hudson Clement ain't going to beat us. That would leave the door open for Braden Trimble to have some opportunity. Obviously, you can't double two different guys like that in terms of Dixon and Clement on the same play. But I do think Braden could be one of those forgotten about or overlooked guys that, as he said, shows up for four for 60 and a touchdown or whatever the case is. I did like that they intentionally, you know, he had that drop. He had a play at the line of scrimmage. You would like to see him be more physical. I did like that they still dialed up his screen to get him a catch, to feel catching a football, to get him ability to get some yards after the catch. It wasn't just one where he turned around and he met a Duke defender, so they got him that screen. I do like that pick, and it was one I really, really considered.
Well, since you stole my guy, I stole your guy. All right, defense, pick to click. Who you got, Joey?
Is there any parameters here? Are there any parameters?
No, take your Matthew Bailey.
You know what? Okay.
It's got to be 10 plus tackles or like a takeaway, right? To get Matthew Bailey?
I did. So, yes, I did initially have Matthew Bailey. And I also wrote, can we take him? Question mark. But if we can, I'm going to take him. And I'll take all those parameters. I think he could be a 10 plus tackle. I think he could be a 12 plus tackle. I don't know if the takeaway is going to be there, but I think he could really be a tackling machine in this game. And I think he needs to. And Illinois needs to use him as somebody who can ramp those up. So you can put the high parameters, because I'm kind of taking the low hanging fruit and taking the guy that this game is kind of designed to feature defensively here. I'll wait to see who you pick to tell you who my pivot was, but put whatever parameters you want to put on Bailey for me to win this, I'll take him.
Great pick. I mean, it's kind of like Caden Hauser at this point. You know, that guy's going to put up some production.
Will not take him again this year. That's my one time I'll take him.
Well, we got to take somebody. We can't like rule out Colin Dixon and Xavier Scott too, right? Like we got to actually be able to pick some of these guys. It's just they're kind of the easy picks.
Or put big ways to win on there, right? Yes. If we're gonna take Hauser, it's got to be a stupid game. If we're gonna take Bailey, which I did, I think it's got to be a stupid game statistically.
It's like a -200 bet or something like that. You got to bet 200 to get 100. I'm going to go with a little bit of a bold one. I wasn't bold enough to pick a linebacker here. I'm going to take a defensive lineman. And I think after the game Will Holmes had, he's going to get some attention. That could free up some one-on-ones for your former side guy, Joe Barna. I think he's going to make a big impact in this game. And I just like him to see some disruption. And I think you can get to this quarterback, Joey. I think you can get to him. He didn't take a lot of sacks last year, but he just did not move well after that knee injury. And if you can force some third and longs in this game, I think you can get some interior pressure on him. And I think Joe Barner's going to be really important to disrupt the running game as well. So whether it's two tackles for loss or like four or five pressures, I'm going to pick Joe Barner. I know he didn't have the biggest week one of that defensive front. I thought Pat Farrell played really well along with Holmes. But I think Barner played a solid game. And I think he's going to have some big plays this year, and I think it starts on Saturday.
Yeah, I love that pick, as you would imagine. I would. And you're right. I think Will Holmes is going to, one, get more snaps, and two, get more attention. And Joe Barna, we know his pass rush ability is really, really good. You just got to be able to stop the run well enough to set him up to have some of those moments. And I do think he needs to be stout against the run here. It can't just be the nose, whether that's Janky or Prater, and it can't just be Farrell. Joe Barna needs to have a hand in that. I flirted with Matt Krasetich. That was my backup if it wasn't going to be Matt Bailey, because I think for all this talk that we're saying, Bailey's going to be playing in the box, I think he's going to play in there a lot. Man, you listen to what they say about Matt Krasetich, and you know he's physical. I did love that he didn't have a missed tackle last week on a defense that was plagued with them, and a season a year ago that he had too many, and he would tell you that, I think. So I think you could see him playing in the box a little bit more. I think just as soon as Duke gets comfortable seeing number 7 there, I can see Bobby Houck pivoting, putting Matt Krasetich down there, letting those safeties be a little bit interchangeable. I really kicked around that idea because I think this sets up for him.
It's what I like about this defense. Like, listen, you like Matthew Bailey around the ball as much as possible, but you can play with the quarterback when you think Matt Bailey's going to be in the box and he's all of a sudden the deep post, or Xavier Scott's up on a slot receiver and all of a sudden he's the deep post. Like, and Matt Krasetich can do a lot of different things, or Matt Bailey can blitz. Like, that's what's fun about this defense, is it keeps these offenses and quarterbacks guessing. So yeah, I like Matt Krasetich. He's a guy considered as well. All right, bold prediction, Joey. Offense, what do you got?
I'm really mad I used the tight end stuff last week because I don't want to go back down.
Can I give you mine then?
That well. Yeah, please go ahead. I have one written down. I don't know that I want to stay on that, so go ahead.
I didn't just make this tight ends. I talked about this with what does Barry Lunny do. I think you got to have some quick hitters, some quick outs here against this defense. So my bold prediction, 5-plus catches combined for the running backs and tight ends. Is that a big enough number? Because we had like, what, two? Two of them last week with running backs. Was Loffrey the only one?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so I
like that.
I just think you're going to get those tight ends and running backs a little bit more involved in the passing game against this aggressive defense. So I'll go 5-plus catches between those two.
You got a touchdown baked in there?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
All right, good. I like that. I just don't know that I feel very good about this.
That's why they're bold predictions, Joey. We don't care.
I know. Caden Hauser, 300-plus passing yards. I just really – you're right. I like the Duke front. I have questions about the Duke secondary. I think you're going to see some yards after the catch. Like, that was the other one I wanted to take, was some sort of yards after the catch parameter here and put that in there. But screw it. I mean, if I can't take Caden Hauser to click, then I will circle back around and take him at 300 plus passing yards. And I just think that this is a team that needs to pass it to set up the run, to let Duke not be as exotic as it wants to be. And I was incredibly impressed with what he did last week.
Yeah, I almost did 4 touchdowns for Caden Hauser again. So I was one of my
bold after 3.
All right, defense. What do you got, Joey? Bold prediction.
Yeah, let's clean it up. I think the defense has fewer than 8 missed tackles after having 14 last week. And that's – I don't know that that's bold against any running back not named Nate Shepard. He really scares me. He really, really scares me for Illinois. But historically, when Illinois has emphasized the hell out of something for a week, and I would just be hard-pressed to think that missed tackles hasn't been emphasized like crazy this week, historically, they've answered that pretty resoundingly. So 8 felt right. I wanted to go 10. I didn't feel bold enough. So I think they're going to clean that up this week. And do you know what? They have to. Absolutely have got to clean that up. And we'll see. I mean, some of the offenders of that, the worst offenders last week, according to PFF, were Jack Paris and Grant Bierman. I think you're going to still see a lot of Grant Bierman. How much with Robert Edmondson healthy? How much are we going to see Jack Paris in this game? Edmondson's going to be a little rusty. He's got to have to prove that he can clean those up too. But just think that they've emphasized it, man. And that's been a big point of probably challenge this week. So this feels like the opportunity.
PFF had him for 16 missed tackles. And to be honest with you, I see some of these players like James Kurtz, they counted for 1. I think there was at least 3 for him. So that might have been a low number. Cutting that in half, according to PFF, would be a huge deal. I had multiple interceptions. Joey, I got to tell you, go watch that Duke Tulane highlight reel. You're not going to be very impressed with the Duke quarterback. He missed so many throws. I think he got lucky on multiple of them. I think he's going to be under pressure against a defense, a Big Ten defense, even if it's not, you know, the best up front when it comes to, like, compared to Ohio State, Oregon. Like, they're going to create a lot of pressure if they get them off schedule. So I think the secondary is going to have chances here to get some takeaways. So I have multiple interceptions.
I like it. I think I took that last week, if I'm not mistaken. God, they got to stop the run to get there, man. Like, that's really what it comes down to, and that just concerns the hell out of me. I think this would set up for that, and I think that they should play man until they absolutely can't. And if you're doing that, I like your ability to get some of those interceptions. So this does set up for it, and Duke was not inspiring as a passing offense a week ago. I do think it's probably not as bad as what it looked, but you got to really try to rattle him and try to make life hard for him.
All right, before we get out of here, rest of the Big Ten schedule, some interesting games. Rutgers at BC, 2 of the worst Power 4 programs in the country. Joey's face said it all there. Must win for Greg Schiano, right? I mean, must win for both these coaches. Like, I don't envy either of them with the low resources they have. Rutgers just outclassed in the Big Ten. I think Schiano's done a pretty good job there. Bill O'Brien has no resources even for the ACC, but this is an ugly one. But whoever loses this one is going to be really ugly.
Friday night spotlight too, if I'm not mistaken. This is
country's watching again. On popcorn.
Oh man, I don't think you want that right now if you're Rutgers or BC. Because if you're BC and Rutgers beats you, then all of a sudden Assistant just lost to UMass a week ago, and now they come in and man, this is. You would be praying to be the overflow Big Ten 11 a.m. game on this one.
These are the games I love to watch. Just the chaos. It's like Purdue 2 years ago. When I was just like, oh my God, how bad can this get?
Can we also, real quick, I want to pivot back to Monday. How pissed would Brett Bielema have been to play that game with no coach to player, with no iPad, with no, like, I legitimately wonder. It also, anytime you think, like, oh, are they going to postpone this game? The answer more times than not is absolutely not, because it's already slotted in to a network. As I saw all those things trickle out, I thought, oh, Brett would be pitching one for this if this were the same circumstances in a game he coached.
Less technology than a high school football game. It's like a junior league football game out there with the technology. All right, Oklahoma at Michigan. Must win for Bryce Underwood? Michigan's a 5.5-point dog at home.
That is terrifying, and that they should be 0-1. That was an absolute disaster for Michigan or Western Michigan last week. This is one of those games. I think Oklahoma is going to win, but man, if this goes really lopsided, whoo, man, not a great start to the Kyle Whittingham era.
Wake Forest at Purdue. Purdue a 3-point dog at home in that one. Mississippi State at Minnesota. The Gophers a 1.5-point dog. I'd take the Gophers there. Good start for them last week. I know it was Eastern Illinois, but Drake Lindsey looks pretty good. Maryland, 13.5-point favorite at UConn. I like UConn and Jason Candle, what they do, so it'll be interesting there. Of course, number one Ohio State at number four Texas, Joey. Oh, I love having this game early in the schedule. It was fantastic last year. Obviously, it wasn't the national championship game like we thought it could be, but Arch Manning, Julian Sain, Jeremiah Smith, a lot of talent on that field.
Is it too late to pivot Illinois-Duke Friday night and then we just move Rutgers-Boston College to Saturday?
Let's do that.
I would selfishly like to be parked in front of a TV Saturday. I think that's a better Friday night game.
And then you get the Cy-Hawk game. Iowa, a 14-point favorite at home versus Iowa State. Iowa has owned that series even when Matt Campbell was there. What did he win, like one or two, something like that? Iowa just always finds a way to win that game, like 20-18.
Yeah, I feel good about Iowa winning that. Iowa can figure the quarterback thing out. And everything else is just such a well-oiled machine for the Hawkeyes.
Yeah. All right, you got anything else, Joey?
Yeah, right before we came on, Shauna Green's contract extension was announced by Illinois pending BOT approval through the 2031-32 season, could extend through June 2036 based on team performance. There were not any specifics involved financially or what those team performances are that'll come out when we see the contract. Keeping Shauna Green around is a good thing for Illinois. We knew she had a Big Ten non-compete coming into this. I would be floored if that was taken out of there. But yeah, that's significant for Illinois to keep her around. And the work she's done for that program, the interest she's driven in that program, the talent that she's driven brought into this program, got to keep her around at all costs. So that's a big deal for Illinois.
So Whitman is through 2036. Underwood is potentially through the mid-2030s. Brett Bielema, with his contract extensions, could potentially be through then as well. This is lining up for just a golden era. I know we've mentioned this before, Joey. We have all these people in place at the top of these programs, the best these programs have been in multiple decades, and you have stability. Like, this is so rare anywhere in college athletics, but this is your strength of your program right now, along with a passionate fan base. You obviously have the AD in place, and it all comes from that. But all those people are locked in and committed. Like, these are coaches that could go a lot of different places, and they want to stay here with Josh Whitman, with Illinois, the resources they're pouring into the program. It's just a very good time to be an Illini fan.
Yeah, and with non-competes. For all the people that we just talked about, they all have at least Big Ten non-competes baked into their contracts. So that tells you a lot about what they think about Josh Whitman. And for Josh Whitman to put the resources in to keep them, that's huge, right? That's where a lot of this stems from, is you've got to have resources to be competitive. They obviously, everybody wants more, but Josh Whitman's made a compelling case for them that they have enough to win, and they're winning games, and it's telling.
All right, we appreciate you guys. Isaac Trotter will be on the podcast tomorrow talking some Big Ten and Illinois basketball. Be on the lookout for that in the morning. But for Joey Wagner, I'm Jeremy Warner. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.